Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, both of us have audio issues week, but we're working through it. Happy, the Mets seem to want to collapse week. It's not that happy, unless you're not a Mets fan. TBT, officially absolutely back this week.
Happy TBT week. Happy elimination Doug Gottlieb week.
That's so funny. I was very happy to see that. I kind of forgot he had a team, but now I'm very happy.
I think his team forgot he had a team.
Yeah,
it's how poorly that went. For those who weren't paying attention, Doug Gottlieb's TBT team got absolutely laughed off the floor. So much for that. That lengthy stay for him.
Was he actually coaching, or was he like sponsoring?
I thought he was coaching.
I hope he was as involved as possible.
I know he interviewed for the Oklahoma State job.
Yeah, Team 23. Is this it? Yeah, he's the head coach, so I guess he was there. It was an Oklahoma State alumni team. And
good job.
Good stuff, everyone. Who did they lose to?
Lost to... Eberlein Drive.
Sure.
It was I don't know what their story is. are they a Houston team? What's their they don't provide a ton of data in terms of like what they do. Oh. No, that's not it. Trying to figure it out. Looks like are they just all players from wherever? Anyway, this is taking too long. Don't really know what their story is. Would love to find out. In any case, they sent Doug Gottlieb home. These things happen. Syracuse plays later in the week. Hopefully, we are not dealing with our own Schadenfreude later this week when Syracuse starts their own efforts. And really, after this offseason's additions have kind of become like one of the I feel like we're always one of the favorites, but I feel like this year we actually might have like a reason to be.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think we got some nice we have the cavalry like early here in some of the overseas elite players who obviously know exactly what you need to do to win this tournament. They're very good at winning this tournament. They had a long run of what, like three or four in a row before last year. So yeah, it's definitely a good group. I think they fill in the spots that we were kind of lacking in terms of the guard positions. This thing is so kind of it's very difficult to win this tournament. So obviously anything can happen, and hopefully, but it does seem like we're getting more well prepared this year than we were last year. Obviously, was being played like right in the heart of COVID. I think preparations were kind of like hard to really figure out because it was, it was early summer. People were still figuring out how COVID even worked. Obviously, like it's far from gone. We all know this, especially with the Delta variant, but we all kind of know the general thing, like the general guidelines. Hopefully a fair amount of our players are vaccinated. It's just, I think, a little more reasonable to like figure out how to get this tournament in and prepare for it. So I'm excited. I'm getting ready for Saturday's game. Pretty pumped to have the event back because it's a pretty dead time on the sports calendar, which is why this always goes really well. And then this and then the Olympics should make for a fun couple weeks of midsummer non-baseball sports, which is always welcome.
Yeah, Syracuse is going to be contending directly with the Olympics, including some Syracuse players playing in the Olympics. But it should work out. I'm looking forward to tuning in to some Syracuse / Boeheim's Army action. I'm sure a lot of others are as well. As you know, I mentioned before, we still have our bracket challenge. Folks want to win some Boeheim's Army swag, some cryptocurrency potentially. A lot of options there for folks. And because all of us have like an equal amount of expertise on these other teams, should really make for a wide open field. I know the level of expertise doesn't really matter in even a regular March Madness bracket. So here, even less so. So guess away, and maybe you can win some things. And you can check out more details on that on the website for those who haven't done so yet.
yeah, it's a very cool thing they're doing this year. Should hopefully bring up a little more, even more attention to the tournament and get some more fan interest. It seems to grow every year. So excited for that, for sure. And the Mets just hit back-to-back home runs, so that's great.
Right. They certainly made things interesting over the weekend, and we'll leave it at that.
I'd rather not talk about it, but that's fair.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about it. Some other Syracuse things happening this week, or last week, in the case of this piece of news. Syracuse football will face Tennessee in the 2025 Chick-fil-A kickoff game. I think a lot of people are pretty excited about this. I think that the ticket cost is probably going to be pretty detrimental for some, because they feel like Tennessee fans are very much going to do what they can to fill the place and travel down or just go if they're Atlanta residents. So I think people are excited because of a like mild rivalry that existed between these teams in the late 90s and early 2000s. I think folks are just excited to play in a kickoff game and get some attention. I think this is good from a, like, you know, get paid standpoint. I don't think it's the best in terms of why are we scheduling Tennessee and Notre Dame, neither of which at home, in the same year, kind of standpoint.
Yeah, I think the price to do the sticker price is probably going to be fairly high because it's, you know, one of these big Atlanta kickoff games. I would bet the secondary market doesn't end up being that crazy. So if you want to try to play that, obviously it helps if you buy through Syracuse for sure. But I don't know how many people will realistically send down there. Maybe a fair amount if we look decent going into the season. Obviously we saw what happened with the bowl game in Florida a few years ago. Like if the team has some hype behind it, like our fans will show up. It's not the hardest. Atlanta's pretty easy to get to. Tennessee's a name opponent. I actually kind of like if we're forced to play an SEC team to open the season in 2025. I think Tennessee's a pretty decent option, just because of the way Tennessee football has worked in recent history. There's a very fair chance we will either be in the final year of Josh Heupel, or we'll be in the first year of whoever takes over for Josh Heupel after he's fired inevitably. So I actually think the timing's not the worst. There's a decent chance we'll be in like the 17th straight attempted rebuild of the Tennessee football program right when we face them. So it should be fun. I'm hopefully I'll be able to get down there because I have not been to that stadium yet. I've been to a lot of things in Atlanta, but the new stadium I have not been to. So it's cool. I mean, it'll be good exposure. It's probably a big payday for us. I know we had like all those talks about like the USC and the Penn State and whatnot games at MetLife when Dr. Gross was still around and how he made sure to sell, but not totally give us all the details on like why they were so important financially. And these are like the big deal, like ESPN, national televised games. We saw Duke get fed to Alabama a couple years ago. So it's not that we're not getting fed to Alabama. So that's good. We'll maybe have a chance to win this one, but who knows what these two teams look like in 2025. But if you like, just given the information we have, I think this is a pretty decent option.
Yeah. I mean, relatively speaking, like if we're going to end up in one of these games, I think Tennessee is one of the more ideal teams to face. This game usually pairs an ACC and an SEC school. So, you know, only so many, quote unquote, like lesser options. And really, like, it's debatable whether organizers would want like a Syracuse, Missouri or a Syracuse Vanderbilt game at all. So Tennessee is probably one of your better draws there. Honestly, like, I think that the one qualm for me is just like, I would have liked it in 2024 when Tennessee could have potentially added a game. And obviously Syracuse had a Power Five opening left. So now in 2025 and 2023 so far, we have two Power 5 games. 2023 features, 2022. So Notre Dame and Purdue are both home games in 2022. And then at least for now, let's see what happens in the Notre Dame game. I don't think it's going to be moved, but, you know, shenanigans can happen. And then for the 2025 season, we have at Notre Dame and then against Tennessee in Atlanta. So not the like easiest slate by any means, but having UConn at least in that 2025 season isn't too bad. I think in general, if more teams are going toward a like two Power Five setup, then we might have to follow along you'll notice if you've been looking at the non-conference slate that now all but two spots are filled from 2021 through 2026. One of those 2024 spots would be an FCS school. So there's really only about one more FBS team to add through 2026, which is good progress, even if we don't really have much filled out after that.
Yeah, what a difference a couple like months makes. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it would have been more ideal if it was like one of these other years. But also at the same time, like, there's a chance that it isn't an exact science in terms of like when you catch Tennessee. The 4-year thing is kind of like just a general guideline for like when coaches come and go. But obviously, if Heupel's good, he's probably gonna be good by 2024 or 2025. And if he's bad, well, probably be bad both years. So I guess it would have worked out either way. But like you said, I think we're going to start to see, especially with the expanding playoff, like you're going to start to see more teams potentially go towards a more full schedule, especially like the second tier teams who are looking to really use things up and put their like best foot forward, because you could have like a 3-loss team make the playoff, and having a 3-loss schedule with like two Power Fives on it looks in the non-conference could be like the difference when it comes to like what's decided for, you know, a lot of like the teams that are just below like the Alabama Clemson tier. So you could also like make the argument that maybe it's expanding so much that teams play pretty conservative and just try to go for like the 0-1 losses. But I could see it going either way, just because like with 12 teams, I think it's going to be a much bigger group of teams that are like up for debate. So the strength of the schedule could end up mattering a lot more. So that'll probably present more opportunities for us to an interesting series. At the same time, maybe it also opens up like the ability for us to schedule down a little bit so we can get ourselves some footing, as we talk about every couple months here, with how we've just kind of scheduled ourselves out of like rebuilds. Maybe that'll actually let us do that a little more effectively, since I don't think any of us are expecting to be in playoff contention in the next couple years anyway.
No. Although at the same time, we didn't expect it in 2018, and
that's true.
Almost worked out.
Yeah, I mean, 2018, we wouldn't have made the 12-team field as currently constituted, but like,
it's impossible. Far away from making it.
Yeah, no, we would have been like a couple spots out. So, I mean, like Colorado would have made a 12-team field if like all the voting went the same way. So yeah. It's not that crazy,
which is exciting. They would have beaten Clemson like they were supposed to in that game.
Oh, they would have been closer to the four. I mean, they would have been like in the discussions for the 14, which is crazy.
Right. Yeah, so that would have been fun. But yeah, you never know. So realistically, I think that, you know, teams are kind of hedging in one way or the other. I think teams, too, are starting to realize, or at least, well, I don't know if they're starting to realize. I think they're starting to over-index maybe a little bit on quality of opponent. Because ultimately, if you lose, it doesn't matter what the quality of the opponent is, that people aren't going to show up. I think realistically, you need to do the work to win the games first, establish yourself as a better program, and then from there, I think you can schedule up, and then people are there because they expect to see you win or compete. But you know, that's a soapbox for another day.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know exactly how these things are going to work out. It's a very inexact science based on like, because like the way that the playoff works for four teams is very well may not just like port over to how it works for 12 teams. So, you know, these are discussions for a couple of years down the road. It sounds like 2023 will probably be the first time we actually have them. But you know, it's nice to actually be able to like dream a little bit. It's like Syracuse making the 14 would have been so difficult. Making the 12, like again, we would have been in range a couple years ago. And like, while that was kind of a dream season for us based on how things have been the last basically two decades, it wasn't like so crazy that, you know, nothing, it's not like everything went right. Like we got blown up by Notre Dame. We just, you know, we could have beaten Clemson and didn't. So it wasn't like such a like over the moon season that we can't dream of like even being a little bit better. But obviously we're far from that right now. We need to get our stuff together here to actually be competitive and make some like mid-tier bowls again. Hopefully this fall, we'll see.
Agreed. We'll get into Syracuse football a little bit more in a sec. But first, I did want to talk a little bit about halftime. Dan, what have you been drinking?
So I was down in Jersey this weekend. I made a stop at Heavy Reel down at Seaside, which has been kind of become one of my kind of go-to, especially when I'm down there, which is a fair amount. Got to try right before it kicked. Luckily, I got to try their their Love Pineapple Dole Whip. They kind of specialize. I've talked about them a lot before. They specialize in sour smoothies and also IPAs. The Pineapple Dole Whip was one of the smoothie sours, which was delicious, really nice, like creamy to creaminess to balance the tartness of the pineapple. I also tried their mango pineapple, which I didn't like quite as much. I thought the two flavors didn't work as well in conjunction. It was a little more sour. It's still very drinkable. And then I also tried their ukiyo, which was a Japanese rice lager with like some lemongrass flavors. That was really interesting. Really a nice amount of sweetness to it. Very drinkable. Had some like really herbal notes. So that was actually, that might have been the most unique one, even with like the smoothie beers. So nice trip to see those guys. They open up a new brewery if you're down the shore in that first barrier island. Definitely give them a shout. They're pretty new, but they do really, really good work with the IPAs and then also the like crazy flavored smoothie sour beers.
Very nice. I had a pretty busy weekend in Chicago. Seen a buddy of mine, got to go out to a bunch of new places. So I'll try to keep this list as brief as possible, but no promises. I know we have an abbreviated show today, so only so much time. I had from Half Acre, had their fully saturated double daisy cutter, really good double IPA from Old Irving. I had Sentinel, an IPA from them, Brewer's Kitchen, at Pilot Project, I had their Copitas. It was a Mezcal Goza, which was super good. Really, really enjoyable. At Metropolitan Brewing, I had Heliostat, a Zwickel beer. I had really good beers at Maplewood. Had a Charlatan, it was a hazy pale ale, and then also had a Cup of Coconut. It was a non-barrel-aged double pastry stout. It was coconut and coffee. That was extremely, extremely good. Also had Lounge Lager from them. I had from Phase 3, I had Pixel Density. Hot Butcher for the World, one of the better ones I had all weekend, was their Mirrorball 3000. It was a triple IPA that I was drinking while watching the misery that was Space Jam 2. Definitely would not recommend that movie to anyone. Had some Zombie Dust and Three Floyds. From Brickstone, I had their American Pale Ale. I went to Beguile Brewing, had their Mosaic Sunny Afternoon. Over at Dovetail, I had their Hell's Lager. I had some Gumball Head from Three Floyds. When I was at the White Sox game, I had some Oberon Ale from Bell's. First Oberon I'd had in a while. Also had No Tomorrow from Beguile. Had Mars, their Radiant Path of Ecstasy. Art Histories, Art History Major, New England IPA. Hot Butcher, I had their Unwind Your Mind. It was another good one from them. It was a double hazy IPA. And then from Hopewell, I had their Vis-a-Vis hazy IPA. So quite a bit going on. Definitely enjoyed myself. No regrets. So we have about 10 minutes left, Dan. So did want to talk a little bit about Syracuse football. I know I was reading some Phil Steele over the weekend, not because I'm a big like Phil Steele head, more just because I happened to get it as the like magazine I went with this year. And despite some various maybe factual errors, some random nuggets that didn't really apply to anything, there was some interesting stuff in there, and just in terms of Syracuse's ability to improve and just their likelihood to improve by default. I know they were on like a bunch of Phil's lists of like most likely to improve, most likely to improve, especially on the offensive end lists. It seemed like he had the linebackers on his radar. Just in general, it painted a rough picture, and I think he had a weird kind of like unfair view of Babers coming back. But at the same time, I also felt that it did paint some pictures for optimism. The fact that the offensive line is in better shape. Like, we don't have to dive into the whole season preview, obviously, because we have plenty of time for that for the rest of the summer. But combined with like Dino Babers' comments on Monday that seemed to indicate that, like, you know, DeVito has the inside track, which we already figured. I'm curious if you feel like there are some big reasons for optimism, and then if there are some areas where you're still very, very concerned going into camp, which is, I feel like, starting kind of late this year on August 6th.
It is starting a little late. I don't know if that's like a COVID thing. Like, everything that changes, I just kind of assume it's a COVID thing. I think, like, it's just obviously, like, to be, you know, beat it over the head, but the offensive line just remains like the big question mark. Obviously, we've changed coaches there. We have a fair amount of experience coming back. Hopefully that experience turns into like good experience and not just like the same guys who weren't good last year are still not good, which is always a concern. I will say I haven't read Phil Steele yet. I should get a copy just to have. But I was reading David Hale's like ever expanding tweet thread about like the ACC position rankings, which he's done. And I thought it was kind of interesting. He had the our defensive backs at the bottom, which I thought was a little unfair. And obviously, I'm a huge fan of Hale. I think he does a great as good a job at the ACC overall as anybody. I thought I'm way higher on the defensive backs we have coming back, even with like the big losses we have there. But then he had our linebackers and our defensive line both ranked around like sixth or seventh in the conference, if I remember correctly. Which I think if you have both of those, if we have mid-tier defensive line and linebacker play, and we have a defensive backfield, which I think should be around that same group, like somewhere in the middle of the pack for the ACC, assuming like the guys who looked pretty good as young players take a step forward next year, then I think like your defense, which was already pretty good last year, could maybe even be a little bit better overall. Because obviously we, even with like those star players we had last year, Sisto was out for so long. We had some injury issues elsewhere. So if you have a defense that's like firmly in the middle of the pack in the ACC, and you have an offensive line that's, even if it's still bottom third, just like it's bottom third and not bottom one, I think there's a lot of hope for change. And then obviously quarterback's the most important position, but I think it's at least a fair chance that we get average quarterback play between either out of DeVito or Schrader. I know Steele I saw had Schrader slotted in, which is interesting. I don't know if he got like a tip off or if he's just guessing. I think it's probably the latter.
I think it's the latter.
Yeah. I know he talks to a lot of coaches for his preview. I don't imagine Babers publicly said that DeVito was probably going to start and then turned around and told Phil Steele that he wasn't. That'd be a weird move. But I mean, I think like at least we have options at the position now this year. Running backs, I think, we've talked about a lot. I think it's a real strength. Wide receiver, I think the group's pretty good. So it really falls. It's the big questions are, were the defensive backs for real? Obviously, defensive line's a little bit of a question, but I think there's talent there. Does one of the quarterbacks play, stay healthy, and play well? And then offensive line is the big question, as we talk about what seems like every week. But overall, I think there's definitely a pathway to improvement. Like, it's like last year, I don't think we were bad. I don't think we were 1-10 bad. I think there were a lot of reasons why things turned the way they did. But I think it was like a kind of like a everything was worst case scenario. So hopefully we can get back and have enough of a bounce back that we make a bowl. But like, I think at the very least, like we should at least return to a 2019 more like reasonable level of bad, which isn't great. And I wonder if we go 5-7, I wonder what happens with Babers, but at least then you're not in like a crazy place.
Yeah. I think realistically 5-7, I think it depends on how you get there. And I think that's something, we definitely talked about that before, like after last year, like 5-7 is going to be tough to stomach. But at the same time, like this is not the easiest schedule. There's really only one sure win on there, and that's Albany. I think Ohio is a very likely win. And then from there, I think Rutgers, I like our chances, but I don't love them. I think that the difference there is 5% one way or the other. Like in terms of like win probability, I think I pegged it at 55% coming into the, like when I started the opponent previews. And I'd put it around there, maybe at 50, but it's somewhere in that general range. And I think having a home game, is what really makes a difference in that one for Syracuse. But other than that, it's going to be, can we hang with Liberty with Malik Willis being like getting all the hype in the world now and being like a quarterback on people's radars, the NFL draft. And the story of every year, and I mentioned this in the comments last week, like, can they win 2 of 3 against Wake Forest, Pitt, and BC? And that's really what the season comes down to every year, or should for the most part. I'd love it if that wasn't the case, and it wasn't the case in 2018, I know, but, if you can take 2 of 3 in there, it's very likely you're going bowling. I think that, last year they didn't really hang with Wake, but they almost beat BC. I think you can swap in last year, NC State instead of Wake, and the same rules kind of apply. I mean, the Pitt game really wasn't all that out of range either. I think ultimately you judge Syracuse by its record first and foremost, but then in terms of like what direction they're headed, how they perform against, you know, Wake Forest, BC, and Pitt, and while they lost to all three of those teams last year, I can't say I was necessarily embarrassed by how they performed against any of them, if only because Wake Forest, the wheels had already come off. Pitt, the wheels hadn't come off yet, but they just didn't have the offense to hang. I think, you know, the fact that they were able to hang with BC as well as they did, all that to me says that this team just simply isn't as bad as they were last year. Doesn't mean they're good, but they simply aren't as bad as what we saw on the field last year by any means.
Yeah, even I don't think you brought up the UNC game even, which was like super close until we just kind of fell apart late. But
that's offensive inefficiencies. Like the offense didn't do anything. So how was the defense supposed to like bend for 60 straight minutes?
Right. I do think we drew really bad luck with Liberty ended up being as good as they are. And like, obviously there are issues beyond football with them, but like they were legitimately really good last year and they're probably going to be pretty good this year again. And we did not foresee that when we scheduled them or when we shut them out a couple years ago and like looked like we were kind of holding their offense like at arm's length, like a child with a pretty, like not even a defense that was even as good as last year's. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think like, obviously the one win is what it is. And like, you could do the Bill Parcells thing and say your record is what it was, like, you know, you are what your record says you are. But obviously you said that the BC game, the NC State game was close. Like if you did like a Pythagorean win projection, I bet we would have been closer to like 3 or 4, which again isn't good, but it's not like all world bad. And then you toss in the injuries. And like, I think you can really draw up like a reason for hope for like at least a mediocre season, which for us would be a major step forward. So, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully we can just kind of dig ourselves out of a hole and just get back on some footing where we can sell the vision of the program going forward. Cause I think that's the biggest concern. Like we had all this momentum that we really squandered in 2019 and 2020, like you can chalk it up to being like the weirdest year any of us have ever lived through. And that's probably a part of it, but everyone was dealing with that. So it's not like the best excuse in the world. Especially because we also got like all of our games in some like quick, unfortunate like turn of events. Like it would have been a lot less painful, I think, if we had just been like, something happened with the NC State game, couldn't play. But no, we got all of men. We were really good at COVID. We were not very good at football. But you know, what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, you can only sell the future for so long, and 2018 looked like the future, and then you go from that to like never really being able to cash in on that season, and now you're cashing in on once again future and playing time for young guys. I mean, there's a real chance like Deuce Chestnut ends up starting this coming season, which is like good, and that's testament to Deuce being a really good player from all accounts. But at the same time, like, okay, like how long are we doing this before we get to, and that's where the questions about Babers and his staying power are warranted. And really, I do think that, you know, 5-7, you're going to have done something interesting, like beat Clemson or knock off Virginia Tech on the road, something like that, to warrant sticking around. Despite, again, the acknowledged challenges with the schedule, I just think it's going to be really hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel if you can't get back to a bowl game this year. And the path's there, even if it's not going to be an easy one.
That's kind of why I don't get overreact. And it's like, it doesn't make it any better, but I don't really overreact with the struggles in recruiting. Cause like we have a lot to overcome in recruiting in general. And I think we would have started to see it if we had not fallen on our face in 2019. If we had like followed up the big 10 win season with like a 7-win season, I think then you're able to really sell something. And by kind of tripping over our chance to really build something there, like obviously our recruiting classes are going to be what they are because we have distinct disadvantages in location, as well as a bunch of other stuff. Like the factors aren't working in our favor. We have to work a lot harder to get decent classes. And you know, you have to find the diamonds in the rough and everything else. But like, you know, you're not going to like see, I don't think Syracuse is in a position where you make one magic hire and all of a sudden you're recruiting like the 35th ranked class and then you can kind of go that way. You need to win with what you get and develop and then kind of move from there. Otherwise it's just not going to go in the other direction. You're not going to, even like a Rutgers. Rutgers has way more recruiting advantages than us by being in a good state in New Jersey, having Reggiano who knows everyone in that state and they're all dedicated to like sending their guys to him. We have a lot more to overcome than even they do. So
let's beat them for one, so that it makes it harder for them in New Jersey.
Beating them would be good. And we do pretty well in New Jersey. Like, we compete pretty well where we have historically. Now Shiano's doing a really good job now, and that makes it tough on us. That the fact that they got him back is, like, you know, great for them. We'll see what happens on the field, but history says so they'll at least be, like, decent. Maybe not. Like, the Big Ten's much harder than what he was in the last time around. But
well, their fans have already told themselves that they're back despite going 3-6 last year. So
yeah, and I get it, because, like, we've kind of been there too. Like, we've done the, like, well, we were 4-8, but we were competitive 4-8. Like, year one Marone, we were kind of telling ourselves similar things. And it's a lot easier to sell. Like, they're not really even like a full rebuild when it comes to recruiting, because you can go and say, like, oh, she's already done this. He did this for 10 years. Look what we got. You had that Louisville game. Remember the Louisville game? It's almost like he's still selling on, like, his last. It's not like you're in year two of a coach. It's almost like you're in year 12 and you just kind of ignore the big gap between 10 and 11 or whatever it was. But with Syracuse, like, it's not going to work the same way. You're not going to just snap your fingers and have, like, a bunch of recruits fall in your lap, even if you make, like, the flashiest hire of all time. Like, if something happened and we hired Lane Kiffin tomorrow, like, he'd probably get a couple of guys that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise, but it's still, like, the situation is what it is. You need to really build something and then get them to come. It's not going to be, you're not going to be able to just, like, convince them otherwise. So plenty of work to be done. That's why when it comes to recruiting, like, I was right there with a lot of people when I was following recruiting more closely day to day and reading all the boards and everything. Now it's just like, you know, I get it. It's too tough to manufacture excitement, like, at a school like Syracuse. You can do it at a state school where you have built-in pipelines. Syracuse has to really massage those pipelines, and it's hard to do that when you're coming off one win year and you're coming off of 6 wins over 2 years.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's something that, you know, fans need to be able to acknowledge. We need to be able to acknowledge people covering the program, but it doesn't make it any easier to stomach, I guess, still, when you look at this team.
Yeah, for sure. It's unfortunate to admit, but, like, I think it's just not worth getting super worked up over, because even if you have, like, the best recruiters in the world, it's just the school is so important. And we've seen that across however many, like, it's not just a Syracuse problem. Like, we've seen so many schools have these, like, blips of recruiting success, but unless they can start to build it from there, like, it's really hard to maintain if you're not at an Alabama or, like, an SEC school or a huge, like, Big Ten, even not all the Big Ten schools. Like, some of those are big state schools, but if Minnesota has a couple bad years, like, they're falling up to where we are, basically. So, and we've seen them have top 25 classes too. So, it's just kind of the way of the world, and that's kind of what makes being a Syracuse fan tricky and why we have to really enjoy the success when we have it.
Indeed. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today, unfortunately. Next week we'll probably have a longer episode again, but Dan, appreciate you taking the time as always.
Yes, thank you for having me. Hopefully we'll both have our technology sorted out next week, and we'll have some TBT the results to talk about. Hopefully good ones.
Agreed. Go Boeheim's Army. And everyone, thanks for listening. This has been Troy Noonan's Absolute Podcast. And great review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go Orange.
Go Orange.